Across an asphalt-covered span of a dozen paces or so, with Dorothy watching the stairway door, Sionji scanning the skies uneasily for police air cars, and Miki looking generally worried and nervous, Utena and Caitlin faced off on the roof of the Imperial Tower Hotel, Kate in her jeans and sweatshirt, Utena in her usual dueling costume. Miki had acquired roses for them from the same source he'd used Tuesday night, the hotel concierge. Utena's white, Caitlin's yellow. "Ready, partner?" asked Utena, drawing the thorn of the rose from her side. "Bring it," Kate replied, and the scabbard of her Zatoichi clattered to the asphalt. "You shouldn't bite your nails," Dorothy said to Miki. "It's bad for your teeth." Miki put his hands in his pockets. Since Christmas time, when Caitlin's father and sensei had given his permission for her to make Utena her training partner, the two girls of Morgan 412 had spent 2 hours a day, almost every day, training in Alden Memorial, or Harrington Auditorium, or Alumni Gym, or out on the quad on the recent nice days, wherever they could find the room. They didn't always cross swords. Sometimes Kate did kata while Utena did strengthening or flexibility exercises, or Utena coached Kate through those same exercises, or Kate showed Utena the basics of the Asagiri Katsujin Kenryu's breathing and meditation techniques, or what have you. But a good portion of the time, they sparred, meeting in mock combat. Their sparring exercises were usually fought with Kate's Zatoichi sheathed, and a special edge cover of Corwin's design fitted to the Thorn of the Rose, fought to the lightest touch rule or simply for the exercise. This was the first time they'd fought an actual rose duel, live steel, fitted targets and all. Both girls felt a surge of exhilaration as they threw themselves into their first honest-to-God test of each other. Miki and Sionji had both watched them spar on numerous occasions. Sionji, because of his interest in Katsujin Kenryu, he'd asked Caitlin to make him her student once, but she'd had to refuse, not yet being a master. Miki, because of his fondness for both participants. Well, why deny it? As Azalin had told him, lying to oneself was just as wrong as lying to another. Both had also seen and participated in numerous rose duels back at the academy. Duels fought for higher stakes than this, to be sure, but under the same rules. Sionji was struck, as he had been when he'd fought Caitlin himself back in December, by the transformation combat wrought in the soft-spoken, unassuming girl. She was always graceful in an understated kind of way, but with a blade in her hand and the gleam of battle in her eyes, she became fluid, like ink flowing from a pen, like a shadow sliding across the surface of a pond. Her fair-skinned face flushed a little, her brown eyes glittered behind her spectacles, and her bearing became feline, like the great striped cats of which she was so fond. She was, he remarked to himself, really quite attractive. If he were not so heart-set on becoming her student, he might well reconsider not having declared suit for her. Utena, for her part, was just the same as she'd always been back in Sephiro, determined, fearless, explosive and reckless, with that same mixture of uncanny reflexes, untutored unpredictability, and the devil's own luck. The only difference was that here, now, she was enjoying the clash of arms, reveling in the skill and strength of her opponent and herself. No reluctance here, only joy. He smiled as he watched her, smiled as he remembered his trio of humiliating defeats at her hands, smiled and knew the universe was just, that his arrogance and stupidity could be put into its place by a wild and courageous creature such as this. It occurred to Sionji then that he was prone to being very philosophical on 5 hours of odd, dream-studded sleep. The two girls ran, clashed, leaped, spun, parried, riposted all around the rooftop, the smiles threatening to split their faces. Caitlin fought with both hands most of the time, wielding her blade in a style that was both familiar and alien to Sionji's Kendoka Ai. Utena's one-handed blade switched from one side to the other, now back again, as she adapted her fighting style to meet her opponent's strengths. The runes across its length began to shimmer and glow as the pace of the battle became more and more furious. Caitlin saw it, smiled still a little wider, her eyes narrowing behind her glasses. She spun away from a wickedly fast thrust, leaped back and set herself. "Get ready!" Utena cried and sprang, scarlet lightning crackling along her blade. For an instant, the countenance of another flickered across her face, but Caitlin wasn't there. "What?" Utena cried, stopping herself and whirling. Kate was nowhere to be seen. In the space of an instant, as Utena had launched herself, the bespectacled duelist had utterly vanished. A shadow flickered across the asphalt, black on midnight gray, and Utena's rose scattered to the wind. And there was Caitlin, 10 feet away, her back to her astonished opponent. She was half-kneeling in the forward crouch of a perfect follow-through, her blade and eyeglasses glittering in the sunlight, eyes closed, a calm, ever-so-faintly smug smile on her face. She rose slowly to her full height, whirled, and bowed.
What did you do?
Utena demanded. Kate smiled. You shouldn't have told me to get ready.
What? Where the hell did you go?
Caitlin retrieved her Zatoichi's scabbard and returned the blade to it, then turned to her roommate and said, Nowhere. You missed me by about an inch. She clapped Utena on the shoulder. Come on, let's go to the zoo. Utena sheathed the thorn and followed her. As she did, she glanced from Miki to Sayanji with a questioning look, only to get mystified shrugs from both of them. Resolving to find out what the hell that had been about when Kate was in a less impishly cryptic mood, Utena left the roof. The Toronto Zoo was well planned. When originally created, it had occupied considerably more land than anyone had thought it would ever need, and had been located what was at the time an inconvenient distance to the north of the city center. Since then, two things had happened which had proven the zoo planner's foresight was not in vain. First contact with Seleucia, and Earth's introduction into galactic civilization in 1999, opening up an entire galaxy's zoological sphere, and the enormous expansions of Toronto in the 21st and 23rd centuries. Toronto, left unravaged by circumstance, strategy, and luck throughout the world wars, had become and remained one of Earth's great cities, one of the four or five regularly known to non-Earthers. This had caused immense growth in times of planetary prosperity, and relatively low shrinkage even in hard times. The city had grown to encompass the zoo, but not before it could acquire still more property to serve as a buffer and house more off-world and endangered indigenous species. Fortunately for Caitlin, who had lost nearly an hour to her duel with Utena and its appurtenances, the zoo had just switched from winter hours the week before, so that it was open until 6 p.m. instead of 4:30. This gave her an extra hour and a half, which was sorely needed if she wanted to see everything, which she most assuredly did. Miki accompanied her avidly, taking in all the sights and sounds of one of the galaxy's great zoological gardens. Dorothy, too, was impressed, though she showed it less readily, as with all things. As for Utena and Sayanji, well, they certainly wanted to be impressed, and perhaps they even were, but it was very hard to tell, because they were the walking dead. Admittedly, Caitlin's plan to see everything in the zoo on the available time was complicated somewhat by her allocation of a solid hour for nothing but the tigers. But as the Bengal contingent had just been graced a few weeks before by the arrival of cubs, that bit of time budgeting turned out to be prudent, and in fact slightly too conservative. For an occasion such as this, Caitlin had 7 with her, not caring a single whit about the social implications of a girl less than 2 weeks shy of her 16th birthday carrying around a threadbare stuffed animal with her in a public place. The tiger keeper, a burly and jovial man whose name tag read Deverick, smiled at the sight as he answered her questions about the cubs, knowing a much-loved childhood icon when he saw it. That kind of thing was why he loved working at the zoo. Something about people's favorite animals brought out the children in them. "I've been wondering, Caitlin," mused Miki as Kate finally tore herself away from the tigers and moved on toward the giraffe habitat. "Hmm?" asked Kate. "Why is your stuffed tiger called 7?
Dad's little joke, Kate replied with a fond smile. "He'd never tried to make a stuffed toy before I was born. He claims it took him 7 tries to get something that wasn't so wrong-looking. Scared me."
Miki chuckled. "Do you think it's true?"
Who knows? Kate replied, patting the head of the ragged tiger tucked under her arm. "It's a family legend. You don't question that kind of thing too closely.
That got a thoughtful nod.
"I see your point," he said.
"That's about how I feel right now," said Sayanji gloomily as he observed a very fat, very torpid python in the reptile house. Said Utena. "I'm too hungry to look that smug."
"You're hungry again?"
"That's the problem with eating," she replied. "It never takes."
"The next pavilion has a snack bar," Dorothy informed them.
"Thank God. I don't suppose it has a bunk room."
"That seems doubtful,"
Shortly thereafter, Sionji was finally able to see an actual moose. He promptly took the crowning photograph of his entire week-long moose hunt, a real moose standing in the same frame as the zoo's representative of the concrete moose clan, this one painted to appear as if it were wearing a natty Armani suit. The experience seemed to invigorate him, and the beautiful, slightly cool day put some life back into Utena as well. By the early afternoon, both had their second wind, and the rest of the day passed in a succession of sometimes amazing, sometimes hilarious, and always educational meetings with the wildlife of the galaxy's Class M planets. They finished with the aviary of otherworldly birds at 5:45, at which point Caitlin made a headlong dash back to the tiger enclosure to get a few more minutes of watching them in before the zoo staff threw them out. "Aren't they magnificent?" she asked Utena as they made their highly reluctant, in Kate's case, way back to the parking lot. "I'd love to have one some day." Utena blinked. "Kate, they grow to weigh something like 600 pounds. "True," said Kate wistfully. "So it'll at least have to wait until we move out of the dorms." Utena wasn't sure if she was joking or not, and decided she really didn't want to find out. Utena and Sionji's second wind burned out on the drive back downtown to the Imperial Tower, but a 2-hour power nap gave them enough life to dress formally for dinner at the Four Seasons. This outing had been selected during their first planning session, Sunday morning, to provide the capstone to their week in Toronto, and as such they didn't stint. Dorothy put on her red dress. Caitlin's black and orange dress got another showing. Miki and Sionji went back to the concierge and rented those tuxedos again. Just to give Caitlin something else to take a picture of, Utena found herself following her joking suggestion of Tuesday night, and rented a tux herself. As Kate had predicted, that got an odd look from the concierge, but his not to wonder why, he'd come through admirably on such short notice, with a swallow-tailed, notch-fronted number like those on the two young men. It had required some adjusting, and the shirt had to be auto-tailored from scratch, but the end result was quite remarkable. All it needed was a top hat and cloak, which Miki promptly dashed out and scrounged on Queen Street. "Corwin's going to want a copy of this one," Kate observed with a smile as she snapped a photo of the full ensemble. Utena grinned. "I figured you'd be giving them the whole set," she remarked.
"Well, maybe except for this morning's," Kate replied. "I'm not sure he'd be able to take that one."
"Will you quit with that already?" said Utena with exaggerated impatience. "Sionji and I are so not each other's type. He likes quiet girls who can't cook."
"Lack of cooking ability," Sionji said dryly, "is not an absolute prerequisite."